gad, what are the long box guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the long box guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, this is Mike from the Long Box Guys, and you are listening to an extra special podcast this week where LT interviews the incomparable artist Chris Burdett. Without further ado, here is LT.
Here I am, Tom from the Long Box Guys, otherwise known as LT, talking with Chris Burdett. I met Chris at PantsyCon and had a great panel with him, and he is a fantastic artist. Chris, why don't you just give me some of the highlights, because you've been doing this for so long and you have such an extensive resume, but why don't you just talk about some of the highlights from your over 20-year career that you've been doing artwork.
Okay, yeah. So when I worked in the film and television industry, I worked on things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, Firefly, and a ton of monsters and zombie movies, but those three are the big ones. And when I made the transition into gaming, I've worked Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, and a ton of Star Wars games.
Yeah, it looked like you probably worked on every single Star Wars game that's ever existed based on your resume.
Well, just the ones that were put out by Fantasy Flight Games.
It just seemed like there were so many listed. And another thing that you have coming out that seems really exciting is the Kickstarter that you have for the Grand Bazaar of Aethra Vandalia. Did I pronounce that right?
Close enough, yeah.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the Grand Bazaar is a collection of art and interconnected stories. It's kind of like a scrapbook meets novel meets monster manual. There are 30 different monsters that are the core content of the book, and there's at least 6 different voices that talk about each individual monster. And throughout those voices, there's overarching narratives and stories that begin to form through those. So as you read the book, things begin to connect and an overarching story begins to develop that will lead into subsequent books.
That sounds awesome. And when it's ending?
It ends on at 9:58 a.m. on the 30th, March 30th.
Okay. So by the time this hits listener ears, it'll probably be like closer to a week. But So listeners, get in now while you still can. And eventually, when the Kickstarter ends, when do you think the book is actually going to be published so that people can buy it if they didn't make the Kickstarter?
Everything is completely done. The book is done. Actually, there's 3 books. There's the main book, there's a coloring book, and then there's a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons compatible stats guide for all of the monsters in the book. And all 3 books are completely done. So the campaign ends at the end of the month. Typically, April will be spent gathering funds and dealing with logistics. And everything's at the printers now, and it will go into production at the beginning of May or thereabouts. And the book should be going out into the world in June or July. So it's happening now.
Oh, that's great. So there you have it, a Kickstarter that you don't have to wait years for. That's amazing.
And I did that purposefully going into the project. I did not want people waiting, and I can't work under the pressure of people expecting me to get stuff done. I mean, I've worked in plenty of industries with killer deadlines, and it's all well and good. And I learned that I can't really necessarily work well to the best of my abilities under those situations. Like in the film industry, when they come and go, we need something completely new and done in an hour. And I'd be like, what? And they're like, yeah, you got an hour. I'll be right back. And I have to completely design something that has never been seen before and is completely changes the game on what demons look like on Angel. And it's like, an hour. Oh, okay, let me just get right on that. So, you know, living in that reality, you know, it's nicer to be able to, you know, have my own time, spend the last 5 years working on getting the book done and then having a finished product that's ready to go.
So why don't you tell us about one or two of your favorite characters in the book, if you have one? I mean, I know they're all your children and you love them all equally, but...
Yeah. That's the interesting thing is that, you know, there's a lot of different monsters and there's a lot of stories about the monsters, but one of the favorite characters of mine is one of the voices. It's a character named Reginald, and he is a elder scholar at an organization called the Impure Husk, and they basically are trying to document everything. So they have lots of researchers and scribes, and they call them acolytes. They send them out into the bazaar to basically document everything. And there's a lot of his writings and personal journals and lectures that are in the book, and it's a lot of stuff about him because he likes to drink, he likes to eat, he imbibes in controlled substances, and he basically, I do a lot of world building through his eyes. So you get to see the bazaar through this individual's kind of impressions. And he was just really fun to write, and I get to have a lot of fun like describing the world through this character's eyes. But for an actual monster that's in the book, that would be the Shaper. Shaper is the closest thing to a villain so far in the book. And Shaper is out for themselves and wants to take over the world. And it's actually, yeah, Shaper was a fun character because you don't necessarily interact directly with Shaper in the book. You get a lot of stories about Shaper. And since, you know, there is the coloring book and the role-playing games stats book, they're all interconnected. So the D&D stats book is actually created as if it exists as a document in the bazaar. So there's characters that created it, and there's all this extra lore and content in it, but then you have Shaper's influences on it. Shaper likes to have their fingers in everything and control everything to their benefit. So it was just a fun villain. I love villains. I love the bad guys. I love monsters. And so it's always fun to be able to kind of play around with a good bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really have a good hero without having a good villain.
So. Oh, definitely. And that was some of the takeaway that I've had early on as a creative person is that, you know, the best villain sees themselves as the best hero in their own eyes. They're doing the best they can. They are the hero of their own stories, but they're doing it wrong. They're doing it for evil intentions. And I find villains and the bad guys much more interesting than heroes. And that's kind of shaped my entire career. Cause I mean, I've designed and built and written about and drawn and created villains and monsters for 22 years now. And it's, yeah.
It's true. I mean, Darth Vader, you know, had the best of intentions.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. I mean, and that's you know, people like to scoff and point their fingers and stuff at the current folks in charge of creating stories. But like the current Marvel Comics storylines of Darth Vader are great. They're just straightforward. He is a lawful evil villain who is trying to do something. And he's trying to exert his will upon the galaxy. But he has his own rules. But the rule is, rule one is everyone else dies.
But he's doing it to create peace.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, you know, you destroy everyone and you bring about peace.
You bring about peace. As long as everyone follows your orders, there will be peace.
Oh, yeah.
So you've been working on this book for quite some time, right?
Only about 22 years.
So has there been anything in the evolution of this book that you kind of reminisce and kind of wish you hadn't gotten rid of that you did get rid of?
No, because I'm working on the next two books as we speak. So everything that I couldn't get into this first book is now being put into the books two and three. And it's been kind of a slow burn because the first 10 years of after I first envisioned this world, it was just kind of me like living my life and working for people and kind of like getting my legs underneath me and kind of like learning how to design and how to create monsters. So that would not have been the time to work on it. You know, I was learning and it was 11 years ago that I really first went back and began to think about this world. And when I first reinvented the main character, Aethra, because that was where it all started. When I was in college, 22 years ago, I was in a printmaking class, and I did this etching of this dragon character in their workshop with all this stuff. And it was like kind of like, wow, where is this? What is this? And I started to kind of get some ideas, and then it kind of got shelved. And then 11 years ago, I went back to that character because I was like, oh, I always really liked this character. And I redesigned it, and I did a new piece about it. And I'm like, whoa, there's something here. And after that point, I kind of just slowly kept returning to that world and doing a little bit more and then a little bit more. And suddenly, finally, like 5 years ago, it really all finally came together. And I realized that all the work that I was actively doing was set in this world, set in this bazaar, and pieces kind of just came together. And at that point, it was like everything goes, you know, it's just what works, what doesn't work, and just moving forward. And what doesn't work gets pushed later, or it gets changed, or my editor comes in and says, no, you got to rewrite that whole section. I'm like, okay, got to rewrite everything. And, you know, and it's just kind of one of those things where it's my world and I'm building it. So I get to have a certain amount of say of who lives and who dies. And so far it's been really good. And it's like, I'm really excited to get started. I'm already started, but just to really start focus on production of the next books. Because, you know, I kind of set the bar at what I wanted to do for this first book. And I realized quickly thereafter that what I actually want and need and can do is much higher. So everything that's in the first book is kind of like a test run. After this, it's going to be more. There's going to be more of everything.
So this is just kind of the foundation. But after this, you're going to have a great patio and a fantastic hot tub.
it all happens in the Grand Bazaar. But the first book was just kind of an introduction to the world. After that, we're going to get down into it and start talking about very specific things and telling very specific stories. Because the plan is right now that all of the odd numbered books, so 1, 3, 5, etc., are going to be one continuous ongoing story. The first book ends on a cliffhanger, and that'll be picked up in book 3. But the even number books, 2, 4, 6, etc., they're all going to be standalone, smaller books that I can more quickly put out and create. So the next book will be book 2. It's going to be a more self-contained thing. There's going to be a lot of art and a lot of writing, but it's going to be much smaller because the first book's 246 pages, and it's a lot of writing and a lot of art. And that'll be book 3. I gotta work back up to it.
Okay. So in the subsequent books, are you going to introduce it through a Kickstarter again, or are you just going to self-publish? Or
Most likely, unless something changes in the next few years, the next book will definitely be on Kickstarter again, because I'm working with my publisher right now on this first Kickstarter campaign, and he's had a lot of experience, and it's been going really well, so I don't want to reinvent the wheel if I don't have to.
Yeah. Also, it seems like it's going well for you on Kickstarter. It seems like you've got a decent amount of support.
We were funded in about 5 hours, which was amazing. And we hit 10,000 within the first day. And so it's been really good. And the current pandemic has put a little bit of a damper on things, but the last 24 hours have actually been really good on the campaign. So, you know, I'm thankful. I mean, we are well over 200% funded. I have nothing to complain about. It's been really great. And it far outreached any of my expectations. You know, going into this, it's like, I just want to hit the bare minimum. I want to get the book printed and go from there. But things have gone well. So I'm really happy.
Excellent. That's great news. It's always nice to hear that somebody is actually making their goals on their art.
Yeah, it's crazy times right now with a lot of my friends they're actively losing out on a lot of their income for the year with conventions being canceled. because of everything that's going on. And I mean, I'm lucky enough to have a pretty secure day job that's with the university. And you know, I'm working from home now, but I mean, I'm still working. And a lot of my friends don't have that fallback plan. So they're scrambling. And it's kind of scary times right now for everybody.
It is. So I was going to ask you, so are you able to do your teaching online? Have they been able to work out the logistics for that in such a short time?
Well, I do instructional design, and I'm an art director. So, we do a lot of production of courses, online courses and games and stuff like that. And so far, this is day two of the homework. So far, I've been able to get a lot done, a lot more done than I usually do. So far, so good. We'll see how it goes, because I think we're all going to have a lot longer time of this than we think.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Also, I've seen in a couple of places some virtual artist alleys going up. And I don't know, since you're in the industry, do you know of any like sort of aggregated site for that?
I think everything's coming together right now. It's pretty quick. I know I'm actually doing an event. It's going to be AridaniCon, and it's done by Aridani Studios. They do elf ears and costumes, and they're going to be doing an online convention, and it should be pretty darn cool. I've known those guys for quite a long while. And April 10th and 11th is AridaniCon. And if you hunt them down, it's ARADANI, Aridani Studios. If you look for them on Facebook or anywhere else they publish, you can find information on them. But it's going to be a 2-day online convention. They're going to be doing online cosplay. Me and some of the other artist friends, I think like Sam Flegel, are going to be doing panels. We're going to be talking about art and making art and what we're doing. And it just kind of starts to just generate some activity and some interaction with people in our new virtual reality.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I assume that there's going to be some sort of online venue for you to sell your original artwork and your prints and...
Oh yeah, I have an online store, and if my Kickstarter, if the art is not available on the Kickstarter, the rest of the art for my book is all on my store actively that you can buy.
Okay, excellent. And if you hear of any, you know, sort of aggregated sites for like a virtual artist alley, please forward that information to us, and we'll plug it as well.
I think we're in the early days of people just kind of realizing what's going on and kind of get things together.
Yeah,
I've seen a couple things literally in the last day of like people like generating some action and starting to put together some things.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the government is moving lightning fast to try to create stimulus, but everything I've seen doesn't really seem to apply to a lot of independent artists. Except for the direct checks that they're talking about. But in terms of like payroll deductions and things like that, it's like, you guys don't have a lot of that, you know, and I don't know that any of you really would benefit a lot from a small business loan, except for maybe putting out a book if you have enough stuff for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm one of the lucky ones for sure, because I have the day job and I have that stability, and I have a wife who's an ER nurse. So she has complete job security right now, but she's also on the front lines.
She's also high risk.
Yeah. Which makes me high risk. So So it's interesting times.
Yeah. You know, so we at the Long Box guys want to do whatever we can to promote independent artists as much as possible in this difficult situation. So anything that, you know, that you hear of that we can help in any way, shape or form, we'd like to do.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's definitely appreciated, because I think it's kind of, we're in unprecedented times, because it's, you know, we're at the dawn of self-published artists being able to create their own content and be out there, but also we're now suddenly finding ourselves quarantined to our houses because there's a a global pandemic. So it's a weird crossroads.
Yeah, it's a weird crossroads because you can, in theory, you can work because you're at home and you have access to your studio probably at home, but you also can't get your artwork to your customers. So it's not like you can generate income from your work easily.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, I don't necessarily, I do gain a certain amount of income from conventions, and I do go to conventions to make money. But a lot of it, for at least for me, is I get to see my art family, while a lot of other artists, the majority of their income is made through these conventions.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm seeing folks that, you know, and people are being very honest in the community, which is kind of nice, but it's also very sobering to see people who are like, yeah, this is 70% of my annual income just got canceled. And it's just like, oh God, it just makes you stop and think.
And it's a bad time for a lot of people.
Yeah. I was talking to my wife in the last day or so that I'm like, I am so happy we're not still out in LA, you know, because, you know, LA was amazing and fun and magical, and we did a lot of amazing things and saw a lot of amazing stuff, but, you know, it was hard to live out there. And it was one of the reasons we came back to the East Coast. And just to think about it now, that to be out there as hard as it was, and then having this global pandemic, I just can't even imagine. I can't think about it, because it just kind of freaks me out. Because I still have a lot of friends still out there who work in the industry, and it's, you know, their jobs pretty much ended this week or last week.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it won't last too long. Hopefully science and everyone's hunkering down will prevail.
Yeah, there's a lot of stupid people out there, though.
There are.
They're all at the beach right now.
I hear you. I understand that. But I still have hope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like my parents and my wife's parents are they're all in their 70s, and they're at home. They're sheltering in place. And it's like, yes, stay there. Because me and my wife and her parents were supposed to be in Italy in May, and that's not happening.
No.
And I have friends in Italy, and I can't. I have a friend in Venice who, he says it's bad, but it's not what you see on the news bad, but it's like, it's bad. And it's kind of like, just hope that we all are okay in 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a good scene, but you know, on the plus side, there are people like you that are putting good things out in the world, and that's all we can hope for.
Doing my best. I don't know if I would have intentionally timed my Kickstarter for the spreading of a global pandemic in the United States, but so far it's worked out. It's like, everyone needs a book to read while they're quarantined. Well, back by Kickstarter, because you'll have a book really soon.
And it is filled with some great art, and I look forward to seeing it. Is there anything that you want to leave our listeners with as we kind of wrap up for tonight?
Wash your hands and buy my art.
Well said, sir. That sounds great. It sounds like great advice. Buy everyone's art, because they all need people to buy it.
Great interview, LT, and thank you to Chris Burdett for joining the Longbox guys to talk about his art and the coronavirus outbreak. Let's not forget that, in addition to supporting the artists that we love who are on Kickstarter or just on their websites, but don't forget about your comic book shops. If you've got a pull list, make sure you arrange with your comic book shop guy or gal to pay for the comics that they've been pulling for you, even if you're not able to go pick up the comic books. These comic book shops that we go to are all independently owned. There's no major corporation that's providing these guys their backing, so they need your business, especially when times are hard. Love you guys, and see you next week on The Longbox Guys.